Hey, I'm Michael.
And I'm Greg.
And we're two new dads and the co-founders of a company called Lalo and your hosts of the Dad Pod, where we talk with cool dads doing cool stuff so we can learn a thing or two. This week on the Dad Pod, we're excited to talk with new dad, Carl Rivera, who's currently the VP of product and head of the Shop Product Group, a first of its kind mobile shopping app from Shopify. Carl tells us about the silver linings of being a new dad during the pandemic, what he does to keep his wife's Latin heritage strong in their family, and having to balance being an entrepreneur and a parent.
So I've been looking for more activities to do with Chase. Like, this has become my focus. Like, what stuff can I do to take up time? Because I've realized that as long as I occupy his time, he's always happy. So recently, we have a pool in my apartment building. So I've been taking Jace every single weekend, probably 4 or 5 weekends straight. And every single time up until this week, I'm like, what's going to happen if I dunk his head? What's going to happen? Like, I'm always tempted. Like, I'm holding him and my wife's looking at me and I'm like, I'm going to do it. And she's like, don't do it. Don't do it. I'm like, why not? He's
got to learn and be happy at that moment too.
Right. He's got to figure this out. Like, I feel like we don't need to swim. Well, maybe we do need a swim instructor at some point, but like, he's ready to dunk his head. I dunked his head. You know what happened?
Nothing.
Pretty much nothing. Like
a little cry.
There was like, you know, he like came up for air and was like starting, and then he realized like he was still in the pool and was so happy.
Yeah,
and it was crazy.
My parents have a pool at their house, and we were spending a lot of time there in the summer. And so she was going swimming. She was actually going swimming like every day because it was an activity.
Well,
she would go with my mom. She'd go with my wife.
Did she
come
love
at
it?
The end of the workday? Loves the pool. Loves the pool. She started going in at about 5-6 months.
Yep.
And like we would take her in. She was younger than Jace is now. And same thing. I was always like, when do they go under? They got a dunk, you know, like all that. And my mom was so nervous. My wife was so nervous. One day.
You just did it.
I just did it. I don't know if you've looked at any like articles or YouTube videos.
I did not look at one thing. I literally just grabbed them. I was like, doosh.
So I saw this thing on a YouTube video. Were you like blow in their face?
My mom told me this, and I'm like, what? So they close their eyes first, or
they close their
tense up.
Yeah, they tense up and they hold their breath actually. So I blew in her face, dunked her, and she was like, and you know, we just celebrated at that point. And
right.
She didn't cry. She was totally happy. But we actually like in the bathtub. My wife is very very prescriptive about this. She does not try to cover my daughter's eyes when dumping water on her head, because she wants her to be comfortable with just the idea of like water coming down, like
yep.
It's going to get in your face, and then hopefully make her more comfortable in the pool. But also like we don't want someone that's a kid that's going to be screaming every time we got to wash her hair.
Oh my God.
In the bath. So we just go for it. So, and I think that will get her this summer. We're going to do swimming lessons because she'll be 18 months by the end of the summer. And
right.
Like, get her some swimming lessons. But there are some, I don't know. Have you seen these like learn how to actually swim techniques that are going on with like little babies?
So I've heard. So while I was having conversation with someone else that I dunked his head, someone told me, did you know you can train a baby who's like 6 months to like flip themselves and swim in the pool?
Yeah.
Like one, like easily. I'm like, how is that even possible? And
so you tell me you watched these videos.
I still have not watched these videos.
They're slightly traumatizing. It feels like child abuse. Obviously, it's some trained, you know, you can't do it yourself. Look, it has to be an instructor that knows the technique and whatnot. But they literally, they just drop the baby in the pool. It's like drop the mic. They literally just like blow in their face and drop them in the pool. And then they like turn over and float. It's like a noodle floating in a pool.
And they just do it naturally almost.
It is baffling. I don't know how it works. Like, I know I'm not buoyant. I know babies weigh less than I weigh. But it doesn't make any sense to me how that happens. I was more like, I just thought like they give you a kickboard. This is how I learned to swim. They give you a kickboard or you have some swimmies on to start and float, whatever they call those things.
Yeah, I think the swimmies.
And you just learn like kick and paddle, like do it. But I'm a terrible swimmer. So like maybe this is how you get the next Michael Phelps. I don't know.
I mean, me either. I mean, like I said, I did not watch one video. It was purely the temptation of what would happen was why I dunked him in the pool. I will say
that. So now do you do it?
So I've only done it once, which was this past weekend. But every time we've been in the pool, to your point about them just like learning things or just being able to do things, you know, I hold him and he's fully like kicking his legs and moving his hands, like as if he knew
right, what to do.
Yeah. I mean, he's almost 11 months old. I mean, he's like barely coordinated to do anything else. But this, like, he actually somehow knows how to do. Like, there's no doubt that I feel like you just need to like put him in the pool every day.
Pull off the Band-Aid.
Yeah, pull off the Band-Aid.
Make him comfortable at least. Like, this is a place we go. This is an activity we do. You will learn this. Yeah. I mean, I'm still baffled.
Maybe your bathing techniques were the real key here. Honestly, for Jace, when we poured water on his head forever, he's never been that happy. We never covered his eyes either, other than one time he got like an ear infection. But he just like keeps his eyes open. It was like, moves everywhere as soon as like he's like loses his balance every time we put water on his head.
Yeah, I'm
like,
shocking,
dude. Just close your eyes. Like, you have all these other incredible instincts, but you, like, this one still has not been figured out.
Yeah, he's communicating. It's a different line. I mean, but they're gonna pick up on it. He's gonna get there. But it's like the idea that he knew to move his legs. He knew to move his arm. It's like if you watch those animal shows. And
when they,
you know,
that like walk, I was watching birth.
One, oh my God, like a horse. Like, I was watching this one the other day. It was on in the background, and a horse was birthed. Literally 20 minutes later, it stands up, walks. Wobbling, and then it's running.
It's unbelievable.
Running, not just walking, running, right. like Seabiscuit to the finish line, running.
Yeah.
And humans, you know, in some ways we're like super evolved,
slow.
And some ways like we got a lot to learn from other species, but. Let's hear how Carl's doing it on his end with him and his wife, Baba, and their daughter, Alma. Hey, Carl, what's going on?
What's going on, Carl?
Hey, glad to be here.
How you doing?
No, I'm great. This feels awesome.
Good.
Great. We're excited to chat with you today as Shopify customers and building our whole business on Shopify. We're excited to have you on the podcast.
Michael, strong shareholder for 3 years now. So.
Well, thank you. I'm so excited to have you on the platform.
But yeah, Carl, actually, Michael and I, you know, prior to hopping on with you, we're just actually talking about the silver linings of obviously the pandemic, right? And we're all sitting here as new parents. So I imagine, right, we're all getting to spend way more time with our family, our kids than we traditionally have or would have had the opportunity to ever. What's kind of been the silver lining for you?
Oh, man. The silver lining has been so clear for me. Like the year prior, so 2019, I guess, I had 182 travel days for work.
Wow.
Which is basically like every other day, you know, I was away. And I had teams in Montreal, in Toronto, in Stockholm, in Ottawa. And I would like the entire way that I had built my work, that I had built my role was to go and see those teams and meet them in person and figure out things like in the office on the spot.
Yep.
And so then in February of last year, Baba, my wife, and I find out that we're expecting a baby. And, you know, we're extremely excited. We're so happy. And at that time, I didn't even like appreciate just how difficult that journey would have been with me traveling like that. Like, because, right. You know, it wasn't the first thing you come to think of. It's just like, oh, we're going to have a baby. This is the most amazing thing in the world. And now, you know, more than a year has passed. We have the baby. We're very happy. And I look back at the first 4 months of our baby's life and I'm like, how on earth would I have done this in the way that I worked before? So for me, in terms of being a new dad and stepping into this new world where I'm now all of a sudden working from this shed, really like a studio outside, like in upstate New York. And I spend all of my days 20 meters away from our house. And I can start the day seeing my baby. I can end the day spending time with my family.
Right.
It's like, this has been a very, very, very tough period in so many ways. And it's so hard to talk about silver linings and things we're excited about. But
totally.
It changed my, like this year has changed my life in a way that I feel very thankful and like grateful for the situation that it's put me in today.
Totally. I mean, one of the things that Michael and I, you know, used to talk about a lot and, you know, what we call the struggle of the juggle, which is being able to juggle so many different things. I mean, we're all sitting here, you know, again, new parents, entrepreneurs. And clearly, I mean, if you were traveling, what'd you say, 162 days a year?
182 days.
182 days. I mean, that's crazy.
Don't undersell them.
Yeah. Sorry about that, Carl. You know, How are you able, I mean, especially at home, like how do you structure your day where you're able to separate, you know, your work life from your personal life in a constructive way?
I wish I had like the perfect answer to this question. Like I'm trying to still figure out what that balance looks like. I mean, the best version of it we have so far is that we'll wake up. Like I always woke up early. We'll wake up a little bit before my wife and her mom, who's currently staying with us, which has been a game changer. And then I will prepare breakfast, take care of our daughter for some time, let them sleep. And when they wake up, they will have breakfast ready. But then at 9, my day starts pretty firmly. And then I'll like run over to my shed that's 20 meters away from the house. And then it's a nonstop race. Like for right. me, I have like, yeah. 9 hours essentially where I am back to back to back to back. And like, I barely have time to check my phone for messages. And then I will sorry, what is that?
I'm sorry to interrupt you there. I was going to say, you know, you mentioned you actually were up a little bit earlier than your wife. You were able to make breakfast and take care of your kid. I mean, you are my idol for being able to do that. How do you do that? And how early do you wake up, I think, is the bigger question.
I wake up, you know, like maybe 6 or, okay. you know, 5:30, 6. So it's not like, oh, I'm up at like 4, like, you know, with sunrise. I don't know when sunrise is, to be honest. I wake up at like, you know, 6 and I wake up, make breakfast, take care of the baby, like get those 3 hours before work starts. But those hours are golden for me. I appreciate those so much. And then I try to be back at 6. Like in the evening. And then I make dinner. I like to cook. And we try to transition over to more like family time. But as I'm sure you guys can relate to, when you've been in that sort of race for 9 hours and you've been like just slammed with work, it's really hard to make that transition in a way that's like direct. Like it takes a little bit of time
for
my brain to decompress, right? And I think that was one of the actually things that were so great when we used to have offices, because you would do that decompressing on your way to work and on your way back from work. You would sit on the subway and for half an hour, I would just stare out into the void. And then when I came home, I was like reset. I was ready to be a good, you know, husband. And now I find that that's been one of the things that I'm still trying to figure out exactly how to do, how to make that shift back and forth like more seamless.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's hard. I mean, you said you love cooking and you'll prepare breakfast, dinner. Are there any other ways you and Baba split your responsibilities? Are you guys pretty defined about that, or is it more go with the flow?
I think that I try to think of my role as being a support structure, like really let her tell me what she needs. Like I want to be there in every way that I can, but I find that it's hard sometimes to anticipate exactly how I'm there in the best way. Like I have my moments where I know that like cooking, like this will be appreciated no matter what day of the week it is. But then beyond that, I don't think we've been so strict about you do that or I do this, but rather sort of like, okay, based on what the current needs, and it's so fluid, like just try to cover the gaps as they appear.
Right. Yeah, totally. My wife and I are terrible, terrible at sticking to routine. So we've written it over and over and over again, trying to find something that works best for us, works best for Gemma, my daughter. But yeah, we're a little more fluid with it. You know, we both like to cook, but you know, I'm not going to sit here and lie and say that she doesn't pull most of the weight. You know, she is working from home, doing a lot of the caretaking, really pulling a lot of the parenting weight, especially, you know, locking myself in for that 9 hours being back to back to back as an entrepreneur. It's hard to pull equal weight. And I think in partnership, it's, you know, it's not always about 50-50. Equality isn't always how it works. But everybody making a structure that does work for them.
I totally agree. I think the one thing, you know, caveat to all of this is like, even if you had the most perfect schedule that worked, kids and babies are super unpredictable. So no matter what, it's going to be hard to stick to that perfect schedule. Like there's everyone's version of what's perfect for them. You know, definitely. And of course, as we all know, sitting here as new parents, there's no one size fits all for any of this.
Yeah. That's where I feel like we've been so lucky to have this third support structure, which is Baba's mom, who actually moved into the house with us. She spends, you know, all of the time with us right now. Because she helps cover those gaps as like all of a sudden something shifted and we need like extra attention to something, she's been able to step in and really support. But, you know, as two parents that are, Baba's building her business, running a company and caring for the baby, and me being, you know, in a very intense work situation, it's really hard without that third person to also lean on.
Yeah, that's critical. We have help from grandparents as well, and extra support that definitely makes things flow a lot easier, and feel very fortunate to have, you know, my mom's watching my daughter today. So she makes everything happen, or they make everything happen. But, you know, in terms of other, you know, one thing that stuck out in learning more about you is you actually took Baba's last name, right?
Yeah, I'm Carl Rivera.
Yeah. So, and as a Swede, you know, a Swede with the last name Rivera, you know, I'm sure that was, you know, to keep her culture rich and alive in the family, and probably a very concerted decision to do so, especially having kid now with, you know, Alma in your life. I mean, what are the ways in which you guys, outside of obviously taking on her last name, are there other ways you keep that culture rich within your family?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I've learned to speak Spanish. Like, I spent the last 2 years like learning how to speak Spanish. Baba's mother speaks only Spanish, you know, fluently. So all of our conversations in the house right now are in Spanish. And I am not nearly as personable in Spanish as I am in English, or as I would be in Swedish. But like, I get by, and we are able to figure out, you know, what we're saying and have good conversations. And I feel extremely proud of having been able to take that step as one of the many ways that I can get closer to her family and to her culture. And that's been extra important for me as we started thinking about having kids, to actually think about like family as a concept overall just became much, much more important to me as we started to consider having kids. And all of a sudden, these roles that like haven't meant much, honestly, to me before, like my mother-in-law and all of that, all of a sudden I start to think about those roles much more, because I don't think about them just in relationship to me, but in relationship to a kid or to our future kids. And then it felt really important to figure out how I can get closer to that.
Yeah.
Right.
How did you, Alma's such a beautiful name, how did you guys come up with that?
We immediately knew when we found out that we were pregnant that we would have a girl. It was like super strange. Like we just knew 100% immediately that like it was a girl. And like when we started like debating or like, you know, ideating different names, we could only think of girls' names. And then we were sort of thinking about, okay, well, this girl is going to grow up in the US in New York. But we both met in Sweden. That's a huge part of our background, of our heritage. Baba's entire family is from Chile. That's a very big part of who we are culturally. And then there was really just only one name left in that Venn diagram, where it was Alma, which is a really old traditional Swedish name. Like, oh, you would find a lot of grandmothers in Sweden be called Alma. But it's also a very common Chilean name. And in Spanish, it translates to soul. And it just felt really amazing to find that name that like is so native to both of our cultures. But it's kind of unusual or uncommon, I think, in the place where we are. So that felt like a really beautiful kind of mix of things.
It's really, really beautiful. And, you know, speaking, right, you guys both moved to New York from Sweden. And I know you mentioned Baba's mother has been helping you guys out. You know, Michael and I, obviously, you know, we talk about this all the time. Like, we're super lucky. You know, we both grew up in the metro New York area and have had our parents, you know, close by, especially, you know, given the pandemic and, you know, us both having new kids. Obviously, our kids' grandparents are literally all over them. How has that been for you guys? How have you guys kind of been able to hopefully get, you know, your parents the FaceTime with Alma and obviously, you know, use them as that support system?
Yeah, FaceTime is really the key word in that sentence, right?
Totally.
Like, it's just FaceTime. Like, it's crazy. My parents haven't met our baby. We FaceTime several times every week and they've seen her grow, but we haven't had that chance to actually come together as a larger family since she arrived. Bob and I hope that we get to spend parts of the summer in Sweden to eventually see the family and, you know, introduce Alma to them. But ultimately, you know, in these times, it's hard to bet on anything.
Right.
So we're taking a day at a time, a week at a time, a month at a time, just appreciating that this is all happening in a time when it's so easy to stay connected, even though you're thousands of miles apart, and try to sort of find, you know, embrace the fact that that Alma's going to be here, and we're going to have so many more precious moments when we'll get to share, you know, her life together with our families.
Yeah, that must still be tough on you.
Yeah.
I mean, I can only imagine that there's got to be a bit of pain in the fact that, you know, she hasn't met that other side of grandparents and getting so close with one. I had that personally. We were living upstate as well with my parents for a while, and she got a lot of time and very close with my parents. And then there was a time where she didn't really get to see my in-laws that much. Thankfully since it's, you know, been a bit more even since moving back to Brooklyn, but it's tough. And I can only imagine for you, you know, thousands of miles away.
It's tough, but we're definitely trying to hold on to the good parts of it and try to focus on those instead. And I think it helps that my sister had a baby just a year before, and because I think that my mom would go so crazy otherwise.
Yeah.
But she's able to channel some of that energy into the other grandchild, which makes the equation work a little bit more smooth.
Yeah,
definitely.
Switching gears here a little bit, as you're working on your work at Shopify and with ShopPay, maybe if you could tell us a little bit more about your day-to-day and things that you're working on. How does it, you know, how does your everyday, I'm sure you're buying tons of stuff all the time for Alma, like how does that behavior impact the work that you do with Shopify and specifically on ShopPay?
Yeah, for sure. So I run the Shop product group inside of Shopify, and it's really two experiences at this point. It's ShopPay, which is the fastest way to check out from any online store on the internet. And then it's the Shop app, which is this super smart, simple way to keep track of those orders all the way from the checkout to your doorstep. And both of these products have had just a phenomenal run and become, you know, quite big platforms at this stage. And I think it's exciting. I mean, it's a product that I get to use every day. I shop so much online. And I think for all of us, our behavior shifted so quickly and wildly due to the pandemic and the lockdown that followed, where a lot of the, you know, the retail consideration that we had in our day-to-day spend moved to online. And we're just relying on e-commerce so much more, not just for the sort of, oh, the nice to have products that we get every now and then, but really all of the products that we need in our lives. And it's been really great to get to use these products that I work with every day and to see other people use them to a much greater extent. It's been a really exciting and interesting year from that point of view.
Yeah, I know personally, you know, I look at this data all the time. Our ShopPay usage has skyrocketed over the last few months, you know, as more people are buying things from Shopify websites and it's learning and people are getting used to that behavior. So it's been really interesting. But one of the things that people don't really know, which I was reminded of yesterday, I was tracking an order in the Shop app for my wife's birthday present. And I was reminded about the carbon emission offsets that you guys do, the carbon offsets. And that's amazing for a business like ours because we want to do our part in being sustainable and giving back and protecting the planet. And especially as we think as a business, look, we're a business that's about family and about children and babies. And, you know, protecting the future of this planet is probably the best thing we can do. But we're limited in what we can do. We're not a huge business. We don't have the market cap of Shopify. But having partners like Shopify be able to contribute and help us do our part is huge. And, I kind of wish, you know, I'm glad we're bringing this up now because I kind of wish we did more of a part and even Shopify did more of a part in letting people know that. But there's a nice gentle reminder when you go to track your packages that the carbon emissions are being offset. What was the decision that went in? Like, how did you guys even think about that being a component of Shop?
Yeah, I think at the core, Shopify is an incredible place to work because it's just a mission-driven company. And the main mission for the business is to make commerce better for everyone. And that main mission can be interpreted and take many different meanings at different parts of the stack. And one of the areas that we look at is this point of sustainability. And in fact, you know, we announced last year that we have this sustainability fund that actively invests in certain different initiatives in the sustainability space. And you can read more about that if you go to our blog. And when it comes then to ShopPay, that was sort of like just a natural continuation of that mandate, of those initiatives that were happening around the company. When I think about the sort of why, it's really two parts. It's one, like because we could and because it's good. That's one side of it. The other side of it, I think, is that it's not so much just about the carbon offsets that we do per order that's being placed with ShopPay. So the idea, right, is that for every order placed with ShopPay, we will offset the carbon emissions of the delivery of that order. That is the thing we're committing to. That in itself, I think, will not change the trajectory that the world is currently on, right? That's not even something I think. It's just a fact. Like, the actions that we need to take at this stage are much greater than that. But I do think that the value of integrating things like this into the experience plays a much more important role than we might suspect, because it's really like, it's conversation starters. It's that, those small prompts that help remind us that, like, this is a thing that, like, is part of all of the actions that we take in our day to day. And all of us can take, like, different parts of the responsibility in different ways. And so for me, the carbon offsets feature as part of Shop Pay is a really good feature that we launched because we could, but that's also really important because it starts more conversations like this one. And I mean, you mentioned to us, like, oh, I wish that you talked more about it. I wish that it was more apparent. Like, yes, that is the thing, right? I think sometimes we do all of these things that are really good, and then we do a really poor job, to be honest, of sharing them and being proud of them and pushing them much more. And I think that's one of the mandates that we have as a team to make that story much clearer and visible.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think personally, it's like, look, it's because the orders that we get placed on our website that allow you to do that. And maybe there are ways that the shops themselves can help tell that story. And I personally would rather use our megaphone than you pat yourself on your back.
Right.
And yeah, it has me thinking a lot about how we can do that and do it in partnership. But yeah. I love that.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, your team, and to kind of take things in a little bit of a different direction, you know, with you traveling so much, you clearly, you know, are managing tons and tons and tons of people. Michael and I are figuring out right now, how do we grow our team sustainably? And given the, you know, the new current environment that people are working in, mostly remote, some people are starting to go back to the office. I mean, what are some of the North Star principles you'd like to make sure that, you know, that you have in place as the team starts to grow and scale?
I think the first thing that comes to mind is that principles are so hard when it comes to team growth. And the reason is that what you need to show up as a good leader for your team is so different between 5 and 10 people, 10 and 20 people, 20 and 50 people. Like, I have found, just as a leader, like, what's important to teams and to team dynamics just changes so quickly. And it's not just based on size. It's also based on, like, where are you at as a company? Like, are you growing very quickly? Are you not growing right now? Do people feel uncertain? Have you just shifted from working in an office to working from home? And I find that through these different phases, like, that's what makes leadership so difficult, that you need different tools to address the situation, like, uniquely. I think earlier on in my career, I had all of these systems. I had all of these different frameworks. And I was like, this is how I communicate. I have, like, one-on-ones, and it happens exactly on this cadence, same for everyone. I have, like, this is the time I address the entire company. It happens on this cadence always. And I think I've become, like, a little bit more tactful over the years in applying different systems to different people at different stages. And now I'm much more fluid. I'm like, oh, this person is, like, they might need a little bit more support or someone to lean on more. Treat that person as a person. Perhaps that's the principle, like, treat each thing for the thing that it is, instead of trying to fit it into, like, this great framework that can scale endlessly, because I am beginning to believe that those frameworks don't exist.
Totally. I mean, one of the things Michael and I talk about as we begin to scale, and, like, you know, historically, I feel like the term has been used, oh, who, like, what is someone who's, you know, can fit into the culture of the company? But as we look to scale, it's really like, who is actually adding to the culture and who's bringing different lenses and different perspectives, to your point where you can't manage everyone exactly the same. You can't have one-on-ones potentially at the same cadence. The needs of each of your employees needs to be met with empathy, you need to have that level of attention of just truly understanding who that person is in order to get the most out of them. And it's amazing that, obviously, you know, at a scale of 8 people, that is obviously kind of the direction we're heading. But even on the scale of, you know, what you're doing, it's kind of, you know, some of those same principles still apply.
Yeah, 100%. And I loved how you said that, like, really trying to figure out what are the strengths of each individual. And I think perhaps that's another principle that I believe actually carries forward, where I believe much more in optimizing for people's skills and strengths than trying to improve their weaknesses.
Right.
I think generally, like, we're just wired to like seek out weaknesses in people and then like spend all of our management trying to improve those weaknesses. And generally speaking, I think it's better to put people in their positions where their weaknesses aren't exposed to the company and where they get to like double down and drive towards their strengths.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's funny because we actually had someone on recently who referred, this is really funny, but it's kind of true. They referred to having kids and they compared it to having direct reports. And I'm curious if you see any similarities or differences in that, like having a kid and, you know, raising a family, like what's the difference between that and also supporting a team that you're also responsible for?
Well, it's funny you say that. My wife and I joke that we think one of the best things that have like really helped our relationship has been to start to treat our relationship much more that like a working relationship. And I don't mean that like, oh, we're now just partners and we're just dividing the tasks like left and right, but that we have really like integrated feedback structures that you would be much more, you know, accustomed to seeing it like in a work environment into our relationship. So we have these like quarterly check-ins where we have like this, it used to be monthly, now it's quarterly, but we have this list of questions, 5 questions that we have decided, you know, jointly are like important questions about the quality of our relationship. Like how much are we showing up for each other? How much are we like planning towards our future? How much different things that were important. And then we rank ourselves like on a scale 1 to 5 jointly, like where are we at on this thing right now? And we have a little bit of a feedback conversation with like intended outcomes and all of that stuff. And so I found that like in a partnership with a spouse or, you know, a partner, putting some of those feedback tools that you use at work has actually been really good and important, because it's sometimes in the rush of everything really hard to address those pain points that might exist. And so I think for me, the work metaphor works really well in the partnership with your partner. I don't know that I would apply it to like your role as a parent. And the only reason is that I think as a parent, you're actually much more like, it's not about what you need. It's about what someone else needs. And so I find, at least in my work role, like I will tell you like, okay, this is what our company needs right now. This is what's important to the business. This is what I need you to do. And that's sort of like, okay, it's, you know, a pretty like, it comes from myself. And in that regard, it's an egoistical point worldview. Whereas like when I spend time with our baby, I'm like, okay, what do you want to do? Tell me, like, it's entirely up to you. I can't do anything to change what you want to do. And I'm just here to follow. Yeah, that's how I would think about it.
Yeah, I mean, every relationship needs to be constantly evolving and worked on to remain strong and growing.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting, right, is that in love relationships, it's really important to understand what the state is of the other person, but it's also really important to be clear about what you need.
100%.
Totally.
And I think that's really where like to have like certain like feedback structures in place is actually really good, because when that's not being explicit, it's really hard to like optimize for the wrong things and think both feel like you're doing really like working really hard to make it work, but you're actually working on the things that don't matter to the other person. Whereas in a parent role, I mean, it doesn't matter what you want. Like all that matters is what's important to the baby and what they want.
Yeah.
So kind of to wrap things up here, Carl, you're 4 months in, right, with Alma. And, you know, 5 months, you've already gone through a lot of growth and a lot of exciting times, but there's a lot to come. What are you most excited for in fatherhood or in the next few months? What are you looking forward to?
I feel like every morning I wake up right now, I see something new in her. In Alma. And so it's like, I don't know if there's a point in time where I'm like, oh, this is what I look forward to. Like, I look forward to waking up tomorrow and trying to figure out like what changed about her today, because it's so fast in the beginning. And I think that like that thought experiment, like asking myself that question every day, like what changed from yesterday, is like the daily driver for me right now.
Yeah. I love that. I mean, Greg and I are seasoned pros. We have a 1-year-old and a 10-month-old. So just kidding. But just wait till about 8 months when they start to learn new things every day. You see their brain move.
It's insane.
It's really magical. There's no other word to describe it. But Carl, thank you so much for
awesome.
Joining
thank
us.
Thank you, Carl.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on the podcast. Really excited.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks for tuning into the Dad Pod. Let us know who you want to hear on the pod next by DMing us on Instagram at Lalo, that's L-A-L-O, or emailing us at dadpod@meetlalo.com. We'll catch you next week with a brand new episode.